I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about government outsourcing, having private companies perform government services. Indiana has been among the most aggressive states in pursuing this practice. We'll talk about how it is supposed to work and whether it does. My guests will be Indiana University Professor Sergio Fernandez, co-author of an outsourcing study, Chris Cotterill, former chief of staff to Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, and Representative Pat Bauer, Democrat from South Bend. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about government outsourcing today, having private firms do work traditionally associated with government. If you would like to join the conversation, please do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests today all have expertise in this area. I'm going to start with Indiana University Professor Sergio Fernandez, who's the co-author of an outsourcing study. Sergio, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Certainly. It's good to have you here. And Chris Cotterill, who is former chief of staff to Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Also happy to be here.
And we hope to be joined soon by Representative Pat Bauer, a Democrat from South Bend. Well, Sergio, I'm going to start the conversation. Could you give us a definition, an overview of what government outsourcing is? It's gone by other names, privatization and all of that, but what are we talking about?
I think the best way to think about this idea is kind of it's an umbrella concept. It's not a single idea or a single tool, as you can gather from the various definitions of it. It's really a series of practices, of tools that involve they have a couple of common features. One of them is that they mostly involve some form of binding contractual relationship between government, a government agency, and some other party. It could be private, for-profit, or nonprofit, but sometimes it involves another government agency, so there's quite a bit of intergovernmental contracting or outsourcing. And then the other common feature across these different forms of outsourcing or privatization is that they involve significant transfer of responsibility from a government agency to another party. Oftentimes it is a private for-profit or nonprofit provider, but again, it could be another governmental unit.
Chris, obviously, Indiana's been at kind of the forefront of this movement. At the state level, probably the most prominent example is major moves in the Indiana toll road. The way we leased the toll road to a consortium in exchange for nearly $4 billion. They collect the tolls, and we invested the money back into our infrastructure. But we've also done it here at the local level, some of it on your watch, obviously, with the parking meters and all of that. Tell me why it's a good idea, why you looked at it.
Well, I think that when you're working in government, you have to know that your highest obligation is to make the highest and best use of the limited funds, the limited resources that are available to you from the taxpayer. And when you start from that perspective, outsourcing becomes one of the things, one of the options that you look at to get to that end. How can we deliver better services to those in need? How can we make more effective use of the dollars we have available to us? And sometimes that's through outsourcing. Oftentimes, I think it's through outsourcing. There are certain functions that shouldn't be outsourced, like the elected official's duty, the person elected to represent you. But there are countless different examples, from trash service to maintenance of golf courses, maintenance of public buildings, those sorts of things, where it makes just a ton of sense because of the economies of scale and other efficiencies that a private, often larger actor can bring to bear on a project.
What, walk me through the probably the most prominent one here in the Indianapolis area, is the parking meter deal. I mean, tell me why that made sense from the city's perspective, and you know, what steps were involved in getting us there.
Well, there, you know, if you look at Sergio's report, a number of things suggested processes, and one of them is identify why you want to approach this. What problem are you trying to solve? And the problem to solve with the parking meter transaction was a vastly underperforming asset. I think the parking rates hadn't been raised since the 70s. Transactions have changed just dramatically since that time, people paying more in credit cards than in change. And the worth of 75 cents in the mid-1970s compared to today has changed dramatically as well. And so you had the city desiring to make better use of it. You had people parking in front of retail shops for long periods of time because it was so cheap to park at the meter rather than in a parking garage. And you had parking meters to upgrade. And so through a vastly, really robust and competitive process, the city identified those things that it wanted to achieve, put it out on the private market, even talked with private vendors about the experience of Chicago and why its approach maybe wasn't the right approach for Indianapolis. So some lessons learned incorporated in the process. And the result is modernized parking meter technology where you can pay from your smartphone. You can find available spaces, solar-powered kiosks and meters, and really an experience that's been overwhelmingly positive for the customer and delivered millions of dollars more to the city on an annual basis.
What were the terms of that deal?
Well, the terms of the deal changed considerably when it was first announced because the process afforded the city, county council, and members of the public to be engaged in that, which is a key part of any large outsourcing or P3 public-private partnership transaction, is recognizing that you don't start with the best deal. You evolve to the best deal because of competition and public input. Ultimately, it ended up, I think, as a 50-year deal with a series of termination rights over the course of, I think, 10, 15, 25, and so forth years. Over the course of the deal, the city estimates approximately $600 million as a result of that to the city. And that included a $20 million upfront payment, which the city used, I think, a substantial portion of those funds to build a parking garage in Broad Ripple.
So, Sergio, it's structured differently than, say, the toll road deal was.
Yes. Even when you have similar long-term leases, they can be structured differently in terms of how the assets are managed, in terms of the revenue streams, whether there's an upfront payment and how large that might be. There's tremendous variation even across the use of these long-term leases, for example, for assets.
And in the scope, and I probably should ask you for an overview, what did your study find? I mean, what were the findings in terms of these public partner public-private partnerships?
Partnerships.
The three Ps, the alliteration's tripping me up there.
Right. Well, our motivation for putting together this panel was to essentially get members of two different communities of experts to talk to each other. There's a fairly large literature that social scientists, academics have produced on the topic of outsourcing, privatization. And then there are also policymakers and practitioners who have tremendous experience with the use of these policy instruments, and they've written extensively about the topic as well. So we wanted to bring together members of these two communities to speak to each other, and the goal was to have them produce a report that offered some practical advice, things that policymakers, managers could do, citizens could use to improve the practice of outsourcing. We tried to get away from debates about whether this was good or bad. I think members of the panel agree that there's nothing inherently wrong or great about outsourcing. It's a tool that needs to be used effectively. It involves planning. It involves considerable amount of time and effort and human capital from government officials to make it work. What we found, interestingly, we found that members of these two communities of experts, we had very little time, very little difficulty agreeing on these recommendations. There was fairly broad consensus about practical steps that policymakers, managers can take to design and execute and manage these relationships effectively.
Who was on your panel? When you say that the panel had a predisposition not to say that there was anything inherently wrong with these, who were the panelists?
The panel was split about 50-50 in terms of academics on one side and then policymakers, elected officials, practitioners who had experience with outsourcing. So we had that kind of split on the panel. We also had international experts. So we had Florian Schmidt, who's a lawyer in Germany, who's been involved in some very large outsourcing initiatives in Germany and in Europe. We had Graham Hodge from Australia. Australia is an area that's undertaken some large privatization initiatives over the last 20, 25 years. And then American scholars as well.
Such as?
Mildred Warner from from Cornell, who's a planner, David Van Slyke from the Maxwell School at Syracuse, Jocelyn Johnston from American. These are all scholars that, as you can see in the report, a lot of their work is cited. These are folks who've published extensively on this topic.
And who were the policymakers?
So the panel had two co-chairs, Ed Rendell, Governor Rendell, and former mayor of Philadelphia, Ed Rendell, and then former Mayor Goldsmith from Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And then there were, I believe, eight other panelists on there, some of the academics that I mentioned. There was David Yarkin served on the panel. David Yarkin is a consultant who works extensively with state governments in reforming their outsourcing practices.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Chris, one of the criticisms that is framed of these government outsourcing or privatization, whatever the term one wants to use here, is that that if government invested the resources, for example, in rehabbing and renovating the parking meter system, then the city would have been able to collect all of the funds instead of having to share them with a private entity. How do you respond to that?
Well, as part of any decision about whether to outsource something or not, you have to go through, and that's part of what the report suggests, is that you consider the various options and consider whether insourcing maybe functions that are already outsourced or keeping things insourced or outsourcing makes sense. And on the parking meter transaction, that was one of the options. But the city has to operate under a myriad of local and state laws and federal laws. There are limits around what the city can do to finance transactions. There are limits around the city's ability to get cheap debt to go in and make those investments. And so as part of the analysis, it was ultimately determined that a private actor could bring its expertise and its financial power to bear and to result in a better transaction, a better deal for the customers and for the city itself.
And in terms of that, we've said that the city probably started with that $20 million payment up front, and we'd be talking about 600 million possibly over the 50-year course of it. How much does the private firm stand to make?
Well, you know, that's it's been some time since I looked at the transaction. The number that sticks out in my head is, I think, in the $200 or $300 million range. It's a substantial amount of money, but it's been so long since I've looked at the numbers on that that I probably owe you a more sourced answer.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. My guests are Sergio Fernandez, an IU professor who has written a study, co-authored a study on the subject, Chris Cotterill, former chief of staff for Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. We hope to be joined soon by Democratic State Representative Pat Bauer. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about government outsourcing. My guests are Sergio Fernandez, who is an IU professor who has co-authored a study on the subject, Chris Cotterill, former chief of staff to Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, and we are joined now by Representative Pat Bauer, Democrat in the Indiana House of Representatives. Representative Bauer, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking about the idea of government outsourcing and the overview. You've been one of the more prominent critics, particularly of the major moves in the toll road deal. Can you tell me what, in the audience, what some of the things to be concerned about are in these outsourcing deals?
I think the toll road is the nightmare that keeps on happening. First of all, it was called a lease when it's basically a sale because they control everything. They told the state police a few years ago that they could not close the road down because in a snowstorm because they were a private company. Yet they don't have to pay taxes on their restaurants and gas stations because they're a public entity. So they have it both ways. I just think the fact that you lose control over that entity in many different ways is a problem. That was once the Veterans Highway. And one of our legislators on the floor a few years ago when they were opposing it, it was called the, it's dedicated to our veterans. And yet, it was during the Eisenhower times that was built. He wanted to be able to move tanks across the country. So she suggested that if a tank came up there, they'd have to pay a toll. So I just thought that showed the absurdity. Also, if you have a wreck on the toll road, all the state police have to be there. They're paid public servants. You have the local coroner, a paid servant. So it's continually, if you will, served by the public and the public taxpayers, but they're a private entity.
If I might synthesize here a little bit, I think, and get us to the nub so that I know, Chris, for example, you were part of the parking meter deal, but I should emphasize really didn't have anything to do with major moves. And I want to talk about the larger topic, if we can. One of the concerns, and a representative, is that blurring of lines of authority and accountability in outsourcing deals. How do you respond to those concerns?
Well, clearly it's more interesting if we disagree, and I disagree with a number of points very respectfully that Representative Bauer just made about the deal, and I think that maybe I can answer your question. There's a several hundred page contract that the state negotiated aggressively with the consortium that runs the toll road and has any number of controls on the private vendor that's financed it. I'm sure the private vendor would say that the $4 billion that was provided to the state, that's tens of million dollars going to the northern counties, wasn't something for nothing. I think the real absurdity was probably that the state was spending more money to collect the toll than it was making in the toll for decades. And so like any deal, though, there are trade-offs. The trade-off does shift risk to the company, Macquarie, that financed the toll road. And yet it also kept certain responsibilities with the public sector as a Representative Bauer pointed out, from public safety. But at the root of it, an aggressively negotiated contract is key. And at the end of the day, there are any number of trade-offs. Eventually, you have to get a deal done if you've decided to move forward. And hopefully the process allows and the contract allows for continual refinement so that problems that Representative Bauer identified could be improved over time.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Greg, what? I'm from Indianapolis. Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind, Greg?
Okay, well, you know, I could come up with a myriad of debates about this here, but the one thing that really concerns me is that from the federal government down to the municipality level, we cannot afford to pay for our services through the taxes that we take in. Everything is too expensive, and in my opinion, that's what leads to the outsourcing part of it. And what I really don't understand is why can we not afford to pay the services that we did for the last 40 years. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Greg. Representative Bauer, I'll let you have the first crack at that one.
Well, I don't, you know, he's got to specify the services. First, I want to say the toll road was not meant to be a perpetual toll road. It was meant to end. It was supposed to become a free road because other states had toll roads and they ended it. And what we did is we continued it, first of all, to make access, more accesses to the toll road. And then I guess I don't think it was intended to make money, but it was to, the only reason they continued the toll was to build more access to it. So it wasn't made to make money. The services he's talking about, he'd have to be more specific about it, but that's why we pay taxes. And we continue to pay taxes to subsidize these private companies. That was my very point.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have emergency services that serve that toll road, and you have other such services. But there's other deals that you're probably very well versed in that just don't gel. We privatize our prisons, basically, in many cases, food services. And they're guaranteed a certain payment, whether the prisoners eat it or not. So if you contract for 2,000 meals, you get paid for 2,000 meals. And if they're throwing away 500 and are not eating it and that, you get it. And within – and the adjustments and the clauses in there are pretty flexible in favor of the company. So they'll come in and do it. I think basically these privatizations, they'll help the person in office. They get the big money up front, and when it's all in trouble, you got somebody else running the company.
And Sergio,
the state or whatever.
In your study, where did you find? I mean, do they inevitably work? Did you look at any privatization deals that did not work?
So, in the introduction to the report, we kind of list some of the positives and of privatization, then some of the concerns. Some of the challenges, and we do note in there that in our review of the literature and mostly academics who are concerned with this question, we do find kind of mixed, conflicting evidence about whether outsourcing saves money, and when it does save money, to how much money are we talking about here? It's not for lack of effort that we have a hard time answering this question. There have been hundreds of studies that have compared privatized with in-house government mm-hmm. service delivery. There have been several attempts to kind of look across all of these studies to find some kind of general pattern or conclusion. There are at least three of these studies that have been done. They're called meta-analyses. It kind of looks like I think of it as a Rorschach test, like an ink block test. People mm-hmm. look at the evidence and come up with very different interpretations about what it says. Some folks, like Savas, who's a scholar, has written extensively on this topic. He's been looking at this evidence for about 20 years, and he's convinced that government saves quite a bit of money when it outsources on average across many different services. One of the members of our panel, Graham Hodge, who's in Australia, he's done one of these meta-analyses. He came up with very different conclusions. He found that the cost savings were less than anticipated, They were you're more likely to save money when you outsource certain services or functions and not others. He also found that the distinction really came down to whether there was competition or not, not so much private versus government delivery, but whether there was competition. So,
Chris, where, you know, in terms of the we'll go back to the parking meter deal. Where do the savings come from there?
Well, that's a much different transaction. That is much more similar to the toll road in that it's largely a financing transaction and tax advantages and the like. The utility transfer in Indianapolis is a much better example about where there's operational savings. And quickly, the city owned and operated its water system. It had separately outsourced that to Veolia during the Mayor Peterson's administration. And then for as long as anyone can remember, the city had owned its wastewater system, which Mayor Goldsmith outsourced to United. So two separate companies outsourced a water and wastewater system owned by the same city. Mayor Ballard's team comes in and says, wait a second, maybe with some analysis we can find ways to save across those because you have engineers, you have lawyers, you have billing systems, HR, you have all this back office and really the construction planning where you rip up the road once for water, you rip it up again for sewer. So that's an example of a transaction that's much more based on the combination and synergies and cost reductions.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. Please join the conversation. Give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, or you can do as this listener has and find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. This listener says, the one thing you can be sure of when Republicans at any level want to privatize, sorry, Chris, government services is that their corporate friends, investors, will make huge dollars from taxpayers while the workers get screwed with loss of jobs, lower wages, no benefits, etc. And, of course, the service that was provided by government employees is always worse when provided by private contractors because they don't actually give in, I'm going to edit here, a darn about providing quality city services. They just want the tax dollars. One of the concerns, I'm going to try to reframe this in a little less angry tones here, if I can, and just say one of the concerns about government outsourcing is that the taxpayers, voters, have a little bit less control over what gets delivered because, again, that blurred line of accountability. And also, there is a potential for corruption. I mean, we're talking, you know, just in the deal we're talking about with the parking meter, not even major moves, the parking meters, if you're talking about, you know, $600 million and $200 or $300 million for the private entity, as late Senator Everett Dirksen said, eventually that begins to sound like real money.
Well, and I just have to point out, I mean, the person that submitted that has their view and they're entitled to it, but absolutes don't, you know, are very hard to prove. I mean, I can immediately disprove the writer. I've done work for a Democratic mayor in central Indiana. Part of my work as an attorney who outsourced solid waste functions and is saving $500,000 annually. That's $5 million over 10 years is very real money to that small town. And how are they saving money? Because the larger company, Republic, can resell that trash for recycling. And it's not through job loss. Similarly, it's not that the public employee doesn't do good work. I've been a public employee, so I think they do very good work. In fact, the SEIU, a major union, AFSCME, another major union, a public sector union, both endorsed the mayor's utility transfer because it gave them more options. It gave them more upward mobility. Mm-hmm. And so their jobs were struggling because of political decisions. And there's corruption potential anywhere because, unfortunately, we're mankind and we're all subject to those kind of challenges. But if you do if you have robust contract management and a robust contract, I think your chances for that aren't any greater or lower than they would be if you kept things insourced.
Representative Bauer, do we have to worry about sums that large ending up in the wrong pockets?
I can't speak to that at this point. I just think the big failure is the fact that you guarantee a profit, and that profit is eventually paid for by efficiency in services, which translates to cuts in services. And there's a couple big elephants in the room that we're not talking about. The IBM franchise, if you will, that already failed in Texas, and we don't seem to learn by what's happened before. And that definitely was a cut in services. And they cut caseworkers. They, you know, the call system went bananas, and it was just a terrible situation. It's still in court and continual probably until it goes to the highest level of court. And then the other one is, what are you trying to say that it doesn't matter how you make money or where you make money? I authored the lottery bill and a few other those gaming bills, and I was attacked by all kinds of born-agains and people that, I don't know, if I guess they were more heavenly than I was, about gaming and the fact that it is, you know, it's costly. And I think some cases it is because it's part – it could – add to addictions. But in any other case, we sold the lottery. And what were we doing? If we're trying to make a $500 million, which is what the company said they could increase our refund, what we were taking an added position to make more money out of gambling. I thought that was pretty interesting. All of a sudden, it becomes a total business proposition. And that was after Illinois had done it. And their goal was 200, and they only achieved 100. So we don't learn by the prior examples. I just think what you're doing when you privatize, you're squeezing money away from the services in order to give a company a profit.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My question is about parking meters, and I've had experience with the privatization of parking meters in Bloomington and in Broad Ripple, and in both cases, the first thing they do is come in and dramatically expand both the hours that you have to pay the meters and the patrolling. And it seems to me that in those cases, privatizing parking meters benefits not benefit the consumer in any way, shape, or form. In fact, it's like a double taxation. We already pay taxes to maintain the roads. When the parking meters were owned by the government, at least, A, it was a minimal hours, and it helped manage flow of cars in and out of busy areas. And B, the money went to taxes that support, you know, kind of taxes, but it went to the city to help the city. Now, in this case, the money is siphoned off to a private company and does nothing to benefit us in terms of traffic management, basically just makes it harder for us to go out and enjoy our own city. I wanted to want you to comment on that, your guests.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, Jennifer. Chris, I'm going to let you take that one.
Well, you make a very good point. I mean, as part of these transactions, I mean, government, for whatever reason, whether with the toll road under Republicans and Democrats in the legislature or in the executive branch and at the local level of government, will recognize that outsourcing shifts some options of control. And indeed, it can separate the local elected or state elected official from decisions to raise rates.
Mm-hmm.
So likely, whether it's Indianapolis or Chicago or Cincinnati, who's looked at parking meters, or Indiana that's looked at its toll road and done something there, people are – whether the government was going to raise the rates or the private entity was going to raise the rates were probably going to go up eventually, because it does become an absurdity when it costs you more to manage the meters than it does that you actually collect.
Is there, though, you know, Representative Bauer's point, and I may be framing – is there something, and I'm going to throw this one to Sergio very quickly, problematic about the idea of saying there's got to be a profit motive to these when it comes to delivering government services?
It all depends on whether profit comes at the expense of a cut in service levels or in quality, and there are certainly cases where that happens.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, and at least as I hear his argument, it is you're building something in there. You know, we don't expect government to show a profit. It's supposed to at best break even. But if they've got more money, it's supposed to go back to the, you know, to the citizenry. This does introduce a different element into the process. Is there something problematic about that?
Not necessarily, because
I'll tell you what. Let's get that on the other side of the break.
Okay.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. My guests are Sergio Fernandez, an IU professor who has studied the subject, Chris Cotterill, former chief of staff to Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, and Representative Pat Bauer. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about government outsourcing today on No Limits. My guests are Sergio Fernandez, an IU professor who has studied the subject, Chris Cotterill, former chief of staff for Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard, and Representative Pat Bauer, who has been involved in just about every big deal in the state for several decades. Sergio, before we went to the break, I was talking about a point I think that Representative Bauer had made, that there is something somewhat distorting about entering a profit motive into the idea of delivering government services. And we ran up right into the time limit right when you were starting to answer.
Right. It's important to keep in mind that when a private company, a for-profit company, enters into one of these contractual arrangements, they can make a profit and still reduce the cost because they bring to the table new technology, new capacity, expertise that government does not have. So they can still do it for less and earn a profit. This doesn't always occur, of course. There are also cases where profit comes at the expense of cuts in service delivery, cutting corners, cutting service levels. But profit can also come through greater capacity, innovativeness.
We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Henry, welcome to the program.
Hi. By the way, you've got a much improved program since you've introduced a little more aggressive response to your guest's comments. But the current question, I'm interested in knowing what the assumptions are when one declares privatization either a success or a failure. And I think probably your last speaker just identified some of those. His presumption is that the private sector brings more efficiency, more technological savvy, and all kinds of wonderful earth-shaking things. These things are all available to government to do, and good government does these things. I think, for example, of the Colorado Springs example where this has been discussed in the media, where the Park Service was privatized, and to this day they can't tell if it's been a positive or a negative program. All they know is that the money has gone to the top of the organization, the private organization that's doing the work, and the employees are living on less. There are winners and there are losers in all these deals. Privatization of prisons, for example. There are tons of examples where the crime rate has gone up suddenly because they've got to fill these prisons in order for the company that's running the prison to remain solvent. There are tons of examples. Why do we introduce the profit motive? Why do we, based on what I consider fallacious assumptions, these are issues I wish you'd really, really talk about and challenge your speakers. And these assumptions, I think, need to be identified and brought to the fore. I mean, whose ox is being gored? And I would address that to both the gentleman who's in favor of privatization and the academic who's kind of sitting there. And it's, well, it's that.
In fairness,
thank you very much.
Certainly. And in fairness, Henry, I should point out, Representative Bauer is primarily a critic of privatization, and Chris is an advocate, but I think they both qualify their positions to some degree. Chris, I'm going to give you a chance to address Henry's questions. Thank you very much for the call.
Well, and we all agree that the end result should be better service, and I would generally say that there are a number of instances when you can get that through privatization, but as you said, not all. I think that if you have someone who is filling a pothole, one employee versus a private person, privately employed employee, filling a pothole, those are easier to see that maybe the profit motive just adds a layer of margin that it costs the taxpayer more. The challenge is that if you take – so think about Indianapolis and our excluded cities. Beech Grove is much smaller. The city of Lawrence is much smaller than Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis has some but not all of its trash outsourced. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it only needs a certain number of people to plow the snow as well as pick up trash. Mm-hmm. There's a good example of why you don't outsource everything. But – the city of Lawrence can save a lot of money because of the size and scope and expertise that those larger companies who are serving other customers already have. It's not that the public employee isn't smart. It's not that the government doesn't have money to solve problems. It's that, like everything in life, there's always someone who can do it better than you. And your job as the public servant is to get the cheapest, best deal that you can to provide better service. When it goes wrong, when it's just somebody making more money, That's why we have contract negotiation and people to manage contracts.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bauer.
Well, I think the he asked what the purpose and the motive, or not the motive, but the conclusion was. It's that I think it's the current office holders having a big lump of money, which they can take credit for expending. I think the toll road's a perfect example. It was actually $3.6 million we took in. We had a $3.8 billion deal, but they had to pay back $200 million because they didn't put it in effect right away because they had to wait to after the vote in the election, because some of the people that were voting for it along the toll road didn't want to face the voters right away mm-hmm. after they voted for it. So they paid back the lost tolls, if you will, of $200 million. But on top of that, we've already spent all the toll road money. Meanwhile, for the next, 75-year deal, 68, 69 years, they will reap all the funds and keep making money. I had suggested to the governor that he just do four bonds, 20-year bonds, and I think we figured out at 5% he could make about $3 billion and ended up with $12 billion, but that was considered plan B on his part. So there's other ways of doing it and making the money with keeping the state control. The other thing is you have to guarantee a number. And, for instance, in the prison deal, it was a guaranteed occupancy rate. Mm-hmm. And the caller really points out that he said that you have to increase arrests. What they did in that case is they imported prisoners from Arizona. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, that didn't work out too well. Within 3 or 4 days, they found out they couldn't smoke and they weren't able to be that close to their relatives, and there was a riot that took place. So the guarantee is the problem. It's the same principle in the lottery. You got to guarantee more revenue, so you got to guarantee more gambling losses. So sometimes what you're trying to make money for may not be what you really want to occur in your society.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Drew, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, do so by sending it to us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Question is, what about the decision, Mitch Daniels, after privatizing the toll road, to shut down the parallel alternative route, presumably to punish the Democratic majority in northern Indiana? That's your neck of the woods, Representative Bauer.
I think what he's saying, what the caller is saying, is that it was in the deal that you wouldn't have competition. Mm-hmm. So the Indiana, you know, I think they were starting out at 20 miles in length. And I brought up during that debate that, you know, this is against the contract. Well, they found out later it was. I think it's down to 6 miles. But because they were also given the no-compete mm-hmm. and the clause.
Assurance.
And assurance. And so that did complicate things. So you have less lanes to travel on a free road.
And it drives, presumably, it drives the traffic back toward the toll road.
That was
the
purpose.
People have to pay the fees. We are talking about government outsourcing here on No Limits. Dash, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well my first comment has to go with the idea that the toll road was costing more than it was taking in revenues. And that's a simple, anybody that has run a business knows, then you raise your fees. And with a government, that's the simple answer to it. And there isn't any argument about that. What this comes down to be is a simple failure of government to do its job and an opening of the door for more corruption. We're talking about, as was already admitted, that there's a lack of accountability and definition of where the accountability comes into with all sorts of things, and simply having a contract manager doesn't do a darn thing for that. You know, I travel around the world and travel around the United States a lot in my work, and one of the things that I've found is that people talk about Indiana's corruption, and I have a saying for that. One of the things that we don't tolerate in Indianapolis and in Indiana is corruption. We demand it of our politicians, and I'm a little bit fed up with it.
Well, thank you very much for the call and the question, Dash. Sergio, I'll reframe that ever so slightly and just say, is there this question of accountability keeps coming back? And obviously, Dash is not satisfied that a contract manager in most of these deals. What other provisions, if there are egregious failures of service or abuses of power, you know, what does it take to get out of one of the deals if they just flat don't work? And I think Representative Bowers, probably is going to be chomping at the bits to talk about IBM and FSSA, but we'll give you the first shot, Sergio.
Classic case.
Your options to get out of the deal depend a lot on the content of the deal. Does the contract, for example, have what they call off-ramps that allow the government to the governmental entity to terminate the contract or end it? Are there performance incentives? Is it a performance-based contract so that compensation is at least in part tied to performance? Is there a body in place to resolve disputes? Are there clauses in the contract that enable the parties to mediate disputes to try to resolve the problem before contract termination? So a lot depends on how the deal is structured and whether it gives government that flexibility to terminate the contract or to reduce the compensation.
I'll give you a few seconds to talk about IBM and FSSA.
Well, I do have to say I don't know of any of these privatization deals that really had corrupt people involved. It's just that they had people that I don't think knew they were being outdealt by the company. If you're asking, is there a way of getting out of it?
Yes,
I think the prime test is happening right now between the state and IBM. And as you know, it was a win for one side. Now it seems to be the one going the other way towards the state. And there's going to be a final decision on that. But I just think what they privatized for, the services they privatized for, and there's always some kind of guarantee in that, is just wrong when you're dealing with human beings and this type of, I'm going to use the word suffering, that goes on. I mean, when you don't provide the services that are needed because you're not going to hire as many caseworkers, or you're not going to hire the people that need to answer the phones and get the case done because you aren't going to profit, that's the incentive it's corrupting, I guess. That's the most corrupting, I think, is the decline of quality service for the sake of profit.
Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment. I think that privatization makes sense if you have a situation where you have competitive markets, which in order to have a competitive market, you need many buyers and many sellers. So like the schools vouchers, that would probably work pretty good. But most of the other applications, like the trash pickup and the parking meters and such, I don't think that makes sense.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to –
I want to respond on vouchers right away. Here's the one problem. If you have vouchers and they're not under the same standards as the public school, and this goes for also charter schools, the standards of achievement are tougher for the public schools than they are for the charter schools and the private schools that receive public money now, and that seems to be an unfair playing field. And also, they can, if you will, choose their customers in both the charter schools. Mm-hmm. the private schools and the charter schools, whereas the public schools are universal schools. That was the whole idea of them. So I think that the voucher thing was a bad.
And that's probably an entirely example. Different show. And we've actually
done
that.
Well, no, it's a bad example.
I know. We've done that a couple of times. But I want to take this, Chris, you know, and get to the point. Are there certain, you alluded at the top of the program and said there are certain things that shouldn't be privatized or outsourced. And you said the duties of elected officials. But are there other basic services? And then I'm going to flip it around and ask Representative Bauer if there are ever circumstances he thinks where privatization makes sense. But I'm going to start with you.
Well, I think that the fact that I struggle with your question reflects that I believe strongly that every public servant has the obligation, as I said at the outset, to make the highest and best use of the limited funds available to them. And the obligations of government continue to evolve, and the expectations of customers, our constituents, continue to increase, frankly, despite national economic downturns, which lead to lower tax revenues, tax cuts, tax caps, mm-hmm. which provide a significant amount of pressure, in particular, to local government. So I don't know that I can really say that these are the key things. I mean, clearly, Representative Bauer's job and the other members mm-hmm. of the elected General Assembly, that will never and should never, for obviously reasons. But that is such an extreme example that I think it reflects my belief that there are a variety of functions you can outsource.
About 30 seconds, Representative Bauer, because we're getting tight on time. Are there any services out there that it makes sense to privatize?
Well, there may be. There are some services already that are somewhat privatized. There are partnerships, nursing homes. Where do they get most of their money? They get it from the government, but yet they're private businesses. So I guess there's hybrids of it that already exist.
But anything like where you hand over what is previously being considered a government service because a private entity.
I can't think of one, but I think there may be. But you don't just do a blanket shutout. But I don't know of any yet that have been tried that proved to be a true service.
Sergio, I'm going to ask you, you're going to get to have the last word in this lively discussion here. Is your study online? Is there
yes.
a place where people can find it?
Sure. It's on the IU School of Public and Environmental Affairs website. There's a link to the report.
Could you give them the URL real quickly?
I cannot.
Okay. So if they want to go to the IU website, what's the
right.
URL there?
It's iub.edu. And then once you're on there, you can search for SPIA. Actually, you can just Google SPIA for School of Public and Environmental Affairs, and you'll find a link to the report on there.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank Sergio Fernandez, Chris Cotterill, and Representative Pat Bauer for a very lively discussion about government outsourcing. I think we could have done at least another hour on this. We will be back next Tuesday when we're going to be talking about comics and comic conventions. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.